So again, the topic is the effect of Medicaid physician fees and co-payments on access to care. APHA is always an interesting conference to go to because I feel like when you're in these sessions, each paper is sort of like the Monty Python of now for something completely different. And so now we're going to have something completely different because I am an academic, and so we're going to look at it from that perspective. I want to acknowledge my co-author, Carolyn Mortensen, who's also here from the University of Maryland. And this paper was funded by NIH. And all the usual disclaimers apply, of course. So the motivation, so, you know, people probably heard there's health reform happened a couple of years ago, and there's still a little bit of discussion about it in the media, too, and in the political campaigns. Health reform, of course, was this huge act and tried to do a whole lot of different things. And one of the things that was integral to the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act was this idea of trying to increase the use of preventive services. And they did this in a whole lot of ways, everything from funding more providers to, again, payment reforms in Medicaid. So a whole sweeping set of changes that are all intended to try to increase the use of preventive care because we've got fairly good evidence that we don't use preventive care as aggressively as we should in this country, and there's a lot of value in terms of health. It may surprise you a little bit to know, that at least it surprised me, I should say, federal Medicaid law doesn't define preventive services, and preventive care is not in any of the mandatory benefit categories for Medicaid. So preventive care is actually a state option. So what PPACA did is a couple of things. The first thing they did is they increased the federal matching rate for states if they would do two things in terms of preventive care for the Medicaid population. First, cover preventive services, and there's a definition for which services they're looking at. And the second thing is for USPSTF A and B services, which I'll define in a minute, to have no cost sharing for those. So those are to be covered by the essentially the payoff is you get the extra money from the federal government if you will go ahead and put these into your benefit packages and make them free for Medicaid beneficiaries. So that's the first thing they did. The second thing they did, the health reform did, to try to increase the use of preventive care, is they increased payment rates for physicians for primary care. And they did it in a very particular way. What health reform did is it increased the Medicaid payment rate to the Medicare rate, but only for 2013 and 2014 with 100% federal money. And at the end of 2014, that money goes away and it returns to be a state option. So what our question, we have a couple of questions then. The first question is, what is the effect of preventive care copayments on the use of USPSTF recommended A and B preventive services among Medicaid enrollees? So we now have legislation that is trying to get rid of these copayments. And so our first question is, what do these co-payments actually have an effect on the probability people use services? And then the second question is, what is the effect of differences in Medicaid payment rates and coverage rules on the use of these recommended services among Medicaid enrollees? And the policy relevance is that the federal match is going to expire within a couple of years. And so we've already... If for those who follow these different policy briefings that come out, this week has all been about states don't have enough money to run their Medicaid programs, and they're cutting pretty drastically. And so within a couple of years, states are going to have to make a choice of, are we going to continue these higher payment rates once the federal money goes away, or are we going to let them payment rates drop to the lower rates that they had been previously? So we'd like to know what would happen if they do drop. So for our data, we're using, again, the Medical Expenditure Panel Survey, the MEPS data. So we used it from 2002 to 2008. Our sample is adults age 19 and older who were either uninsured, enrolled in Medicaid, Medicare, or private insurance for at least 1 year. There's lots of great things about MEPS. That's why we all use it so heavily. We got very big sample sizes. So our total sample size is about 240,000 observations. And as you see, it varies depending on which of the preventive services you're looking at, but across all of the preventive services, we have very big sample sizes to try to see the effect of these different policies. And then we combine the MEPS data with Medicaid physician fee data from Zuckerman in a couple of different studies that he's published that data. So what we did was we took the MEPS data and we used the self-report data to create an indicator variable showing whether or not people used the recommended preventive services in the appropriate time frame. So what we did was we used the U.S. PSTF task force. They have guidelines on who should get preventive services. And so what we did is, in the previous slide, you saw that the sample size varied depending on the service, because what we did was we defined the sample based on who ought to get that preventive service. And then we created an indicator variable to say, for that sample, whoever, everybody, according to the US PSTF, everybody should have gotten the service, and then we created an indicator variable showing whether or not you got it or not. And then just a simple probit model. The coefficients I'm going to show you are all going to be marginal probabilities. On the right-hand side, we put sort of the usual suspects, obviously your insurance coverage, which is the variable we're mostly interested in, the usual sociodemographic variables, so age, race, gender, income, education. We had health status variable, self-rated health, the number of chronic illnesses. We put in a dummy variable for the state that you're in, and then, of course, the Medicaid payment rate. So again, I would say this is sort of the usual model you would expect for this. Okay, for our first research question, coverage and cost sharing, what we found was there's not much action there. And I'm not going to show you any analytic result because there's really nothing going on here. Essentially, all the programs, 49 states cover cervical cancer. Mammography is covered by 48 states. So again, when this was sort of a hunt and find mission where we were trying to figure out what do the state Medicaid programs actually cover? And it turns out that virtually all states cover virtually all of the recommended preventive care services. Then within cost sharing, there's only 5 states that charge any cost sharing, and it's pretty novel. So again, although health reform apparently made a change in terms of requiring these services and trying to eliminate cost sharing, services were already covered and there wasn't cost sharing. So this really is not going to have a big effect. The second question I want to talk about, the second piece then, is what about this increase in provider payment rates? Now, this is a map that the Kaiser Family Foundation put together. And what this is showing is the ratio of Medicaid to Medicare payment rates. And so the lightest color shows states where the payment rate is between 36% and 64%. That is, Medicaid payment rate is between 34% and 64% of the Medicare payment rate. And then as you get darker, the payment rate gets higher and higher until actually Alaska is the one that's the highest at about 140%, where the Medicaid payment rate's about 140%. But the point of this map is there's a lot of variation in the payment rate. So you can see we have a lot of variation. This is the cross-sectional variation, and then there's also a lot of time series variation because a lot of states made efforts to increase the payment. You know, this is a pretty well-known problem with Medicaid, where Medicaid doesn't pay doctors very well. And so there were a lot of efforts during the last 10 years to increase the payment rate. So we have a lot of cross-sectional variation, and then we also have a lot of time series variation. This map, I think, also probably doesn't necessarily follow your prior expectations in terms of, you know, like red states, blue states. It doesn't break down quite that cleanly. So this shows the difference between the screening rate for the Medicaid population in 2002 and 2008. And as I said, during this time frame, you saw a fairly significant increase in a lot of states in the payment rate for preventive care in the Medicaid population. But when you look at this chart, you don't see an increase in the use of preventive care over the time frame that we're looking at. You see a little bit of a decline in, for example, mammograms and pap smears. That's actually a fair, consistent finding across the literature. That's true in all commercially insured populations also. But in general, what you see is that it's fairly stable over the time frame that we're looking at, even though, again, behind this, there's fairly substantial increases in payment rates. This is 2008 data, and so this is showing insurance status and preventive services. And what you see as you look at this picture is that, again, to take the middle example of cholesterol screening, there's essentially no difference between the screening rates for the Medicaid population, the commercially insured population, and the MEPS data. You see little differences for mammograms and pap smears if you compare Medicaid and the privately insured. Again, privately insured is in blue, Medicaid is in red. Green is the uninsured, And you see very consistently across this data that they have the lowest screening rates. But the effect is not nearly as clear when you compare Medicaid and commercial insured. And this surprised me. I thought that the rates would be quite a bit different than they are, but that's what they look like. This is comparing Medicare and Medicaid screening rates, and again, we're defining the screening, the use of screenings based on the population that's eligible for it. And again, other than for sigmoidoscopy and for, there's not a real huge difference here. And one of the ideas here is that we're going to increase Medicaid payment rates up to Medicare rates, which theoretically then would create access that's equal to the Medicare population. But actually, when you look at the underlying data, there's not a huge differences in the screening rates between the two populations. This is a Probit result, and what we've done here is we ran a Probit where the dependent variable is whether or not you got the screening or not. And so I've got six different columns here showing the different preventive services. And then I'm showing you three different models. The first one, the first row is showing just the insurance variables. So just put it, all that we have on the right-hand side is whether or not you're Medicaid or not. And in this sample, we're comparing Medicaid to the privately insured population. The second, we have the Medicaid variable and then also your state dummy. So effectively a fixed effects model. And then the third one, what we did was we put in the insurance and the state effect, and then we put in all the usual right-hand side, all the socio-demographic variables. And so what you see is, for example, taking the first box up there is if you just look at the compare Medicaid to the commercially insured, Medicaid population is about 5.8% percentage points less likely to get a pap smear than the commercially insured, which is consistent with the descriptive statistics we saw. This is essentially just the descriptive statistics. If you put in controls for the state of residence, that effect doesn't change. If you put in the demographic variable, it goes away. And there's no statistically significant difference between the probability somebody on Medicaid gets a pap smear and somebody who is commercially insured does. And so what you see, again, is you go across the first row. The ones that are in bold are significant at the 0.05 level. And so what you see is that the Medicaid population is statistically significantly less likely to get the preventive screens. But once you control for state and population factors, most of the effects drop out. And in fact, only three of the first three, pap smear, mammogram, and fecal occult, are insignificant. You get a small effect for cholesterol screening, a small negative effect for sigmoidoscopy, and a small positive effect for blood pressure screening. But once you put in, again, once you put in the sort of full controls, there's really not a statistically significant, there's a very weak and inconsistent relationship here. Is there a problem with our model? Well, we did the same thing for the uninsured. And what you see is that when you just put in whether or not you're uninsured and compare that to the commercially insured, you get, again, big significant effects. So again, for pap smear, the uninsured are 23.9 percentage points less likely to get the screen than the commercially insured population. Build in state dummies, put in the demographics, and you still see a very big significant negative effect, just exactly what you'd expect. Again, so even controlling for all the different factors, uninsured people are about 20 percentage points less likely to get a pap smear, you know, 25% less likely to get a mammogram, you know, and again, very across the screen, just as you would expect. So the model seems to be working very reasonably, and when you look at the other right-hand side variables, all the coefficients have the sign you would expect and are largely significant. Then the payment rate, just putting in the insurance, whether or not you're Medicaid, this sample's only Medicaid only, so essentially, if you look at that bottom row, that's our full model. Payment rate had no significant relationship to the probability people got screening in any of the models, which, again, not what we expected at all coming in. We're just using a fairly simple economic model. You pay people more, the probability that they accept Medicaid patients would be higher. And, in fact, we don't see that relationship. So we've spent a lot of time talking about why is this? Have we misspecified the model? So we tried a number of different sensitivity tests. We put in, instead of just having our Medicaid-only sample, we put in the privately insured and used some interaction terms, still insignificant. Without, maybe it's a managed care effect, because a lot of states vary in how much they use managed care in the Medicaid population. So we controlled for managed care, we stratified by managed care, still insignificant. We changed our definition of the Medicaid population, so instead of full year, 9 months, still insignificant. We limit our analysis to the 10 biggest states, which have the biggest sample size, still insignificant. We redefined our fecal test into a single category. We limited our sample to people who had encounters. It's still insignificant. So the bottom line, and again, the reason it is if you just go back to that descriptive data, there's not a big difference in the screening rates between the Medicaid population and the commercially insured population, the Medicare population. And so that's why the payment rates aren't having a big effect. So our conclusion is, again, the baseline level of preventive screening is lower for Medicaid enrollees, but if you control for state and demographic factors, there's no statistically significant difference in general. That's not true for the uninsured. The uninsured are much less likely to get the screens than the Medicaid population and the commercially insured populations. So the preliminary results suggest, and we're very open to suggestions if people have ideas of the model. So our results suggest that Medicaid payment rates weren't significantly related to use of the preventive services. In puzzling through this, you know, why doesn't payment matter? We went back to the literature, and there's a fairly substantial literature on the effect of Medicaid payment rates on access to care that's been over more than 30 years. As we reread this literature in light of what we were finding, my stylized conclusion is that generally payments aren't the most important factor in Medicaid access. It's a mixed literature. And so some studies find that there is an effect on payment rates. Most studies find there's either a very small effect of Medicaid payment rates or no effect of Medicaid payment rates on access for Medicaid population. Instead, what they find is there are other factors that have a much bigger effect on Medicaid recipients' access to care. For example, reimbursement delays makes doctors not accept Medicaid patients. The availability of alternative sites. Are there community health centers available? Are there clinics that will take the Medicaid population? And then finally, the Medicaid participation by provider. And that's driven somewhat by payment rates, but it's also driven, according to the literature, more so by things like how many primary care providers are there in your region. You know, so if in an area where there aren't very many primary care providers, it's hard to get access for Medicaid beneficiaries. Practice type and ownership. So again, if there's low-income clinics, if there's university clinics, they'll take Medicaid patients. And so if you have a lot of those clinics, you're going to get access. And essentially, those are the first-order effects. And the payment rates seem to be more of a second-order effect. Okay, and that's the end of my presentation.
I'm just wondering, I see patients, I know how the interactions go when you suggest preventive services to them, and so it's not a surprise to me that uninsured are going to be lower because they don't even get in to see me, so
right.
The conversation doesn't even happen. But when I do get pushback on preventive services, it has to do with co-pays frequently. Is there any way of looking at out-of-pocket costs as being, because I'm sure the private insurers do this, that in California, where I practice, the specialty care co-pays are double or triple.
For Medicaid?
Right. For private insurers. That's how they keep people from overutilizing specialty.
Sure. Yeah, and we... We're looking more at the Medicaid population, and essentially for the Medicaid population, they don't have copays. So that was sort of beyond the scope of what we were trying to look at, because we weren't looking at access for the commercially insured population. I mean, our real question is, what happens when these higher payment rates for Medicaid expire in 2014? And what this suggests is it probably won't have a big effect on access, because it's just Medicaid payment rates aren't having a big effect right now. Yeah.
Yeah, question and also probably a statement. I'm curious, there's no reason you would look at this in the study. You said that prevention services that the states offer under Medicaid, do you know if those track the state mandates on insurance companies? statement until the ACA, when it was passed in the state mandate to prevent issues because the people passed the ACA when they eliminated and managed to keep them. And for people may not know what that is, that's a state requirements, legislative requirements on insurance companies for what they offer the state. You think it would probably track the same.
I'm not sure. I mean, it's an interesting question. So would the state require private insurers to offer benefits that the state themselves doesn't offer in their own insurance plan through Medicaid? And I don't know the answer to that. I'm trying to think.
Yeah. Have difficulty finding the state prevention package for Medicaid. It may be there's some language there somewhere that kind of looks to what they're requiring insurance companies to do. It's not making it hard to find to stand alone.
But for the preventive services, we're looking at essentially all the Medicaid programs are covering them. So it's not, there's no issue that these aren't in the Medicaid package already. Yeah.
So with the expected number of people entering Medicaid in the future under the ACA, because the states are going to have, for instance, you had Texas up there, and if you make 3 cents a month, you don't qualify for Medicaid, it seems like that's a very low rate. What we have been suggesting is something similar to the Welcome to Medicare physical, which we worked on to get getting passed, and that is Welcome to Medicare physical to find out all these uninsured people out there that haven't had these services and try to get a snapshot of what their health is and hopefully intervene with diabetes and other chronic diseases or about to be chronic diseases before they progress.
Yeah, and I guess. I think that sounds like a great idea, and what we're finding is that for those newly eligible people, they're going to be much less likely to have received the usual preventive screens. So,
and what comment would COVID have to take up everyone's time? But we're finding in Medicare, for instance, you know, there are specialty tiers, and you create a new specialty tiers for expensive drugs, and when you start getting a real high, they don't even call it copay anymore, it's really being called co-insurance. Quite simply on taking their medicines and come out of the United States with chronic diseases and really having some severe medical problems as a result because they can afford 30% of $80,000 a year product.
Right. And I think we've got a fairly good literature showing that that's true. But again, for this population, it's just not an issue. It's because there aren't any copays for right now. So, another question, yeah.
Do you think that the reason that the rate didn't go up as planned is because the incentives were for the providers and not for the patients? So, you know, they didn't capture any of the uninsured to get on Medicaid to then come in. I mean, did you see an increase in the number of providers that accepted Medicaid with the increased rates making access better? But I don't think it incentivized the people that you needed to capture to make it work the way that they wanted it.
Right, I think that's probably right. And our next step is actually we're going to look at the provider side. But right now we're just looking at the access side. And, the other thing is this just may not be a big enough, you know, if you think about the typical provider, there's some providers where a huge portion of their client base are Medicaid. They're located in low-income areas. You know, they're a lot of times they may be community health centers. They see lots of Medicaid patients. You have other providers who see essentially no Medicaid patients. So if you don't see a Medicaid patient, will an increase in the payment rate for preventive care make you start opening up your practice to those patients that you previously haven't been seeing? So now you're going to willing to see a woman. Now you're being paid an extra $10 to give a mammogram to a woman, but you normally wouldn't see her for anything, and now all of a sudden you're going to just see her for a mammogram. No, that seems, you know, again, looking at the literature, it seems unlikely, and if you look at our results, it doesn't seem to have an effect, so.
Questions, yeah? What you're looking at was the sort of, for people who were in an office visit, and they were in the right demographics to get the particular test, did they get that test?
Right.
But I think it's interesting that if payment rates do go up and there are more providers in the area, that sort of people who weren't going in because they couldn't find a provider or something now may go in, even if
Yeah, and that was our theory, but that doesn't happen. I mean, so if you're gonna get that effect, what this study says is you've got to get more doctors to take Medicaid, and just increasing the primary care payment rate isn't going to be enough to do it. You're gonna have to think about maybe training more providers. You're gonna have to all the other issues that we know. Things like make it more appealing in general for doctors to take Medicaid patients. Just these piecemeal changes aren't enough to change provider behavior and get them to take Medicaid patients. That's essentially, and again, that's not necessarily, that was not my prior coming in, but again, when we look back the literature, that's fairly consistently what people are finding. Great.